Tonight we are doing the mountains of arts, education, and media. And so I want to welcome you all to the call tonight. Tonight we have three panelists, and I love the fact that tonight we have panelists, and we have they're cross-generation. So we have a couple of millennials tonight, and as I introduce you, I'll give you information about them. And then we have baby boomer tonight, and so they're going to give us their perspective about arts and entertainment and media, and it's going to be wonderful because we're going to hear it from more than one generation. And our hope is that as we go forth out of this series, we truly connect with millennials, Gen Xers, the young people that are going to lead, and give them information that they need, give them the space that they need, give them the guidance that they need, and give them the opportunity that they need to lead, because they're going to lead very differently than we did. And so that I'm excited about that tonight. Our first panelist tonight is Elena Surratt. She is the founder of Bless the Body, which is a host of communities and fitness formats designed to build the mind, body, and soul of the millennial woman. As a wife and mother who desired to stay healthy, Elena decided to marry the two within the Bless the Body community through the Millennial Mompreneur. The Millennial Mompreneur community supports women to shape their bodies, babies, and business. Currently, the Mill Mom has reached women all over the world and continues to grow through their workouts, community, and podcast. Prior to beginning her entrepreneurial journey in 2018 as co-founder of a boutique bar studio in Atlanta, Georgia, Elena worked with the mayor of Washington, D.C. as a health coach for the city and as a trainer and ambassador for North Face. She attended Howard University and is ACE group certified in addition to being certified with the John Maxwell team. Currently, she is designing her own fitness format to be released May of 2020. Good evening, Elena.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
How are you? How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be on, and just letting you guys know that I'm not going to be PC tonight, politically correct. So I just want this to be, like, just a comfortable setting. I'm going to talk to you guys like you're my girlfriend, and, yeah, so I'm excited about
and
tonight.
We have some men on the line. We may have some men on the line. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And men, so, or
amen.
Girlfriends and guy friends.
So. Good. Thank you, Elena. That's what happens when you have millennials. I'm telling you, and I love it. I love it. Pamela Purifoy is an award-winning communications professional, having started her career 30 years ago in radio in advertising sales. Pam has developed successful marketing communications programs for multiple industries, including banking, automotive, healthcare, nonprofits, and retail. She is an active member and a co-chair of the National Association of Black Journalists Media Related Task Force. She is the owner of PR Pro Media, Digital Marketing and Brand Strategies, and has been selected as the first senior public information officer for Durham, North Carolina's largest government agency. She has positively shaped the image and reputation of the agency, securing numerous positive media stories about a once beleaguered institution. Pam is recognized for her seasoned advice on social media management, branding, crisis communication, and strategic communication. I'd like you to welcome to the call Ms. Pamela R. Purifoy. Hi, Pam.
Hey, how's everyone?
Wonderful. You can't hear them, Pam, but they can hear you.
Okay.
We have everyone muted because we want to be able to hear you all tonight. It's good to have you with us.
Right. I'm so thankful to be on. It's such a blessing. Thank you.
Yes. And our third panelist is Jessica Little, a culture writer and producer who has written for publications like NBC News, Essence, Nylon, and Medium. She has interviewed Cindy Trim, Mariah Carey, Jonathan McReynolds, Travis Green, and Anthony Brown, to name a few. Jessica has written her own screenplays for production. She previously has worked in advertising, marketing, and media for several global companies, including the United Talent Agency and Topple, both in Hollywood, California, Dance Theater of Harlem, McCann Erickson, a global advertising agency, and MTV Networks as a leading creator in entertainment content. She is a graduate of Georgetown University Law Center and Howard University, and is a member of the John Maxwell team. Jessica, welcome to the call.
Hi, thank you for having me. Excited to be on.
Great. Now, of course, you may all know that Jessica and Elena are my daughters. And so
yes,
I'm really,
phenomenal.
And I'm excited to have them on. And Pam and I go way back. So we had daughters at the same time, and we lived in the same place. And so we have long history together. So even though Jessica and Elena may not, well, Elena certainly, but Jessica may not remember Pam. Pam knew her.
Mm-hmm, so, I sure did.
So it's a reunion. It's a reunion. So, ladies, yeah. I am so excited to have you on because art, entertainment, and media is so key and plays so much of a vital role in our society today. I want to start by having you just tell us a little of your story about how you chose to be in this particular area. Where was your first introduction to arts and entertainment and media? And how did you decide that this is what you wanted to do? Pam, we're going to start with you first.
Okay. Well, I really kind of stumbled into it. I was a person that went to this high-powered high school in Detroit. You might heard of it, Cass Technical High School. Mm-hmm. And I was in the chemical biological sciences curriculum, full-blown science. Knew so much science that even when I got to the University of Michigan, I started, I had a job in their gynecological endocrinology lab making buffer solutions for the laboratory. That was how tough our chemistry classes were in high school, that I could get a job like that at the U of M hospital. But long story short, I found myself really unhappy and searching. I've always been real creative and all that type of stuff. So I started taking some classes in communications, and I found my niche. Everything kind of clicked for me when I took this class called Theories of Persuasion. I will never forget it. And that just kind of started my trajectory onward, and got my first job out of college. I was Pam from Wham, a small radio station in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and learned so much. Had to deal with a lot of racism, but there was a Christian man there by the name of Dan Poole, who was my first mentor. And he took me under his tutelage and taught me so much. And Dan went on to the big radio stations like WJR in Detroit and all of that. Media sales is very, very lucrative if you don't. I know Jessica knows for sure. And that's sort of like how my career started. And I loved advertising. I was that nerd that knew all the advertising jingles and all that kind of stuff and could create programs and what have you. And I just found my niche and loved it and continued to pursue it. So
wonderful.
I discovered it in college, I think, yeah.
Wonderful. Elena?
Okay, so like the two people that are pretty much responsible for, partly responsible for my life today are on the phone. So my sister, my career started off with dancing. And my sister, she was dancing since, I believe she was like the age of 5. And so I just grew up watching her dance. And, of course, as a younger sister, you want to be just like your big sister. And so I started dancing. I love dancing. I danced in college. And then I danced professionally in the NFL. And in the NFL, they have really strict guidelines on, like, weight and everything like that. And so I was like, well, I need to just, like, figure out how I can keep my weight in, like, the appropriate spectrum and still, like, do what I love. And so I saw an ad for a fitness job looking for dancers. And it was actually Sadie, the girl who was on here last week, founder of 305 Fitness. She gave me my first fitness job. And I absolutely loved it. And I really loved it because it merged purpose, meshed with, like, my skills and my abilities in dancing. And then after that, it just kind of snowballed from there. I just worked with I had the opportunity to work with great brands, and then increase like my education within fitness. So yeah, after that, it was just like a snowball between the two, and so that's kind of how I got into it.
Okay, and Jessica.
So for me, it all started with storytelling. So I loved writing poetry. I started writing poetry when I was maybe about 12 years old, and I was an avid reader, just like a little nerd, and my mom, she always bought me books from the time I was a very little girl. And so I just had this strong affinity for storytelling. I can't explain it any way other than that. And so I started off just writing in my bedroom when I was 12, 13, writing poetry, and then it moved into writing short stories and books and all kinds of stuff. I would just write in my bedroom. You know, when we got computers, I would write on my little computer. And I'd say my senior year of high school, I got a job at a small local newspaper. And so it was like my first writing job. And I was like, I really like this. You know, I'm kind of good at it. You know, at that point, I'd been writing for a long time. And so then it was nice to get paid for it. And so from there, I went to college, and I started off as an English major and switched over to journalism, wrote all throughout college. And when I graduated college, it was the big, we were in the middle of a recession. And so my initial plan was to go into publicity, actually, go into PR. And I really enjoyed that. It was a lot of writing, a lot of speaking, a lot of presenting, and at the time I was interning for a really large entertainment brand, and there were like, I couldn't find any PR jobs. So I ended up randomly getting a call. I was in New York City. I was working probably at like a really small job, just like trying to, you know, scrounge up enough money just to have. And while I was working that job, I got a call about another job, and that job was McCann Erickson, which is one of the largest ad agencies in the world.
Yes,
and I went
is.
To work with them. Yeah, and I didn't work. and so I was just grateful. At that point, I had been looking for a job for, I think, 7 or 8 months. And so I was kind of getting down on myself, and my plan wasn't working out. I felt like I worked hard, and, you know, I went through that whole thing. And but God worked out. So I got that was my first job, and that was my first, I guess, entrance into that career. And I had an amazing boss there who really guided me and really let me kind of do what I wanted to do. I had a lot of responsibility for being 22 years old. Our client was L'Oreal Paris. And so, I had a lot of face time with the client, which was really great, you know, for it to be my first job out of college. And, it was great. And then from there, I mean, we'll get into more
yes.
like the path, but that was my first entrance into entertainment and media.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, so there's a lot of complex things that we know sometimes is involved in our journey. And so I'm happy to have everyone on the line tonight, because the people that are on the line tonight, some have had, you know, maybe straight journeys, but most of us have not. And but I want to talk about arts and media tonight and what it really means now. Pam, in terms of the leadership and communication area, because you've done a lot in PR and advertising and communication, why and how are the arts critical now, or have always been, have always played a role in how we communicate, but how do you see it differently now, or do you think it's different, or how has it evolved over the years?
I think that it certainly has evolved over the years from my perspective, because it used to be where the brands told you everything. It was like they were always talking to you, telling you what to do, how you should feel, and all of that. And they still do. They still do. That's what advertising does. But what I would say now is that because of the wake of social media, it has greatly democratized communication. And to be successful at it, even as a brand, you have to be able to be comfortable with all these various moving parts and literally almost 24/7 monitoring things. Literally, that's what I was dealing with when I first got on the call. Something came up. And it was on social media. And I got it from a colleague from the county, and it impacted my agency. So I had to make sure that the director knew. And he's like, what? You know, it was all that was going on while I was on another phone trying to deal with you, you know, get on this call. So that's the thing. With social media, everybody can be an expert, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Everybody can, you know, everybody is an ethical in how they're going to talk about your brand or whatever. So it's just not, it's a whole world different. I mean, social media has changed the whole trajectory of how we communicate and who listens to whom. And, you know, now you've got influencers and all those things going on at once, so that you have to, you know, keep your eye on and ears to the ground.
Well, you said something really critical, and that was, Pam, in terms of the social media. And I know millennials are into social media big time. So, mm-hmm. Elena and Jessica, tell us how social media, for you individually and just for your generation, how has that played a role in your life, and even what you're doing now, how does it play a role? And Lena, we're going to start with you first.
Yeah, I think Pam had a great point of, like, everyone setting themselves up as an expert on social media. And I think for, you know, no disrespect to, like, my generation or anything like that, but, like, I think it's, like, a whole bunch of, like, fake experts, you know? Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So I just think that it's a little bit dangerous, actually. And it definitely influenced the fitness world, because now it's, like, super saturated with people who have, like, not gotten any certification, have not had any trainings or anything like that. They just pick up something and, like, hey, let's do this workout. It's, like, people need to know how to work out safely. And I don't know. I just see that it could become dangerous, but I think it's going to be – I think, you know, life is cyclical, so I think people will start looking for more of, like, a deeper connection and understanding of, like, how the body works, things that I should do that are safe. And so I do think that that will come, but, like, as of right now, everyone's just kind of following, like, who's hot or what's popping, rather than, like, who is, like, actually knowledgeable about what they're talking about. So, yeah.
What influence do you think that's had on people, even in your generation? And even between the media.
Well, I think that's it's been just encouraging. I think that's been just kind of encouraging surface level living and understanding. I do think on the positive side, it has made us more connected, obviously, in certain ways. It is easier to, like, help each other and get connected with certain people. But I do think it is a little bit harder to kind of weed out, you know, who's real and who's not. So I think that influence of just everyone setting themselves up as expert is just, experts has made it popular to have, like, surface level understanding.
Oh, great. Jessica, what are your thoughts about social media?
Yeah, so I think social media is great, and I think I agree with Elena that it's harmful in some ways and it's great in some ways. I think social media is like any other media, where the purpose, I think really good people who are really good on social media, they do one of three things, or they do more than one of these three things. They entertain, they inform, and they inspire. So entertain, make people laugh or give them an instructor to inform, to give them insight into a specific experience or dynamic, or to inspire, to move them towards something internally, towards something with a feeling. And when you look at social media and you look at people who are really making a splash on Instagram or on Facebook, that's what they do well. And I think that is similar to any type of media. So if you can do good media, I think does one or two of those things really well. And I think great media does all three. And that is true on television as it is true on radio, as it is true on social media now. One thing that I really like about social media from a storytelling perspective is that it kind of created a democracy. So before, an institution like Hollywood, which is notoriously hard to get into and break into, that was like the big, that was the way to get in if you're a storyteller, if you're doing anything in that medium. Now you can get on Instagram and you can write a story. You can get on, people are podcasting now. You can get on Twitter and create a following. So on one hand, it's like, yes, everybody can kind of become an expert, and it's hard for people to really sift through what's good and what's not, what's expert and what's not. But I think that's our responsibility as consumers. So on the positive side, I do think that people, particularly those from marginalized groups, those who aren't well connected, have space and opportunity to kind of create their own platform.
Wow. Pam, what do you say to that? As well, the difference from when you started. Yeah.
I agree with her absolutely 1,000%. I was thinking about the young lady. I'm terrible with the name. I can see her face that, what's it? Is it Awkward Black Girl? What's that? You know who I'm talking about.
Issa Rae. Yeah,
Issa Rae, she started her show. She started on YouTube, I believe.
On YouTube, right.
And so, it was like I said, too, is that it has greatly democratized communication. And is it Elena? I get the kids mixed up. Was it Elena the last time? It does give people an opportunity to be smart and create some things. There's some people that don't create such good things, but you know, you have to have a spirit of discernment, and hopefully you can figure it out. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Now,
but it's night and day from back in the day. That's for sure.
Well, that's what I'm asking, Pam, because back in the day, let's say before social media, and you were talking about the differences of social media and before social media, because we now have this convergence of generations who have taken social media and they've been able to create things and move forward by storm. And then you have people who are kind of teetering in the old way of doing things. What would you suggest to people who maybe started out in that old regime, that old regimen, and some are coming into social media, but they're coming like kicking and screaming?
You can't come kicking and screaming. You know
okay,
what?
Okay, that's tell us about that.
I'm fully engaged in social media management and do it for a number of different pages and stuff. I do a lot. And so I don't I'm of the mindset that you have to learn new things. You can't stay stuck in the dark ages at a fax machine. When I used to send out press releases, that's what I did. I stayed at my fax machine. Oh, my God. I can't tell you how long I was staying at a fax machine. And with social media, it's just a click and there you have it. It's out, you know. It's you have to learn new things. I make it a point. Even when as an independent person, when I wasn't with the county of Durham, I always made it a point to invest in myself for trainings and workshops and what have you. And now you've got webinars and all kinds of ways to learn new information, pick up new tips, be part of a professional organization to improve yourself. Iron sharpens iron. So you have to, I learn from young people, I learn from people my age and some that are older. I learn from everybody. And you have to be, you know, you have to have an open mind. You have to stay fresh on content and what have you. You just got to stay on top of things.
Good. When you think about the three of you, when you think about art and the arts and entertainment and communication, and you think about in school, usually it used to be that our first introduction a lot of times, besides home, of course, was our introduction to the arts was in schools. And now a lot of schools have removed the arts. So I want to hear from you in terms of the role your school or upbringing played in the arts, whether you were in the arts at the time or not, but the role it might have played in your life, and how you feel about the fact that schools have removed, I know we've concentrated on sciences, and I think that's great because we need scientists, but what do you see? Do you see a downfall from removing art from the schools? Elena, we'll start with you.
So I went to a performing arts school in middle school, and I majored in dance, and I really liked it because it kind of gave me like an academia point of view, an experience with dance, and that was like my first time ever really getting the opportunity to choreograph and meet other girls that were like-minded as myself. And I also think that some of the girls, I think, actually two of them, I think it was their first time ever actually dancing, you know, before they came to the school. So I think it afforded opportunities for kids who wouldn't be able to normally pay for expensive dance classes when they were younger and have that experience to dance. I mean, I look at people like Missy Copeland and, you know, other dancers who were afforded opportunities who danced later in life. And I think that has a lot to do with the opportunity to experience art in school. So I don't think
How do you think it shaped you? How do you think you shaped you as an individual?
I don't know. I think it shaped me in different ways and like diversity. As far as switching up my different genres of dance. Of course, like when you're paying for your classes, your dance classes at like a traditional dance studio, you can kind of pick and choose which dance classes you do. But with, in performing arts school, it's like, this is what you do. So I learned a lot about like the history of dance. It gave me a deeper appreciation and a deeper understanding of the art that I was actually practicing, and so it gave me a deeper respect for it.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, you said gave you a deeper respect for what?
It gave me a deeper respect for my art.
Oh, okay.
So
I didn't hear you the last part.
Yeah, so it gave me a deeper respect for my art.
Great. And then what about you, Justice?
Yeah, I can say that this is work that I did actually with Dance Theater of Harlem. I was a marketing manager there for a while. And in Harlem and in the Bronx and in Upper Manhattan and in the New York area, there were a lot of schools that were cutting arts programs out. So we actually had, in addition to our own studio and our own dance company, we actually had someone who was responsible for creating arts programs in those schools, right? And I think that that is so important. If you're, and I would definitely want to encourage anyone who works in education that if you're working in a school where they're cutting out arts, look for programs like that, like we had at Dance Theater, where you can, and they have them in different communities, particularly if you're in a big city. If you're looking at your local, look for your local art, in your local arts organizations, and a lot of them have systems set up to go into schools. That's really important to know. I think for me personally, it made me more human. You know, I think that when you go into school, even from a young age, you're taught to really develop a skill. And I think school is great because you get to kind of a taste of everything when you're growing up. But I think on the practical side, it's really good to develop that skill. And I think your skill may not be math or science. It may be drawing. It may be dancing. And I think that's fine. And we need to not stigmatize that. If a kid's not good at math, it doesn't mean that they're a failure. And I may be a little sensitive about that because I was not good at math, but I was good at that may be my own thing there, because I wasn't good at math, but I was good at English. You know, I was good at writing. And so I think that that's okay if you have a kid like that. And so taking arts out of the school kind of tells them, well, your skill and your talent isn't as good as this kid's skill and talent, which I don't think is helpful for them in the long run in creating productive citizens in the world. And so I think that's on the practical side. And then on the more theoretical side, like I said, I think it makes you more human. You become more in touch with yourself. I think nothing nothing will get you out of your experiences, your personal experience, more than experiencing the arts. And in, because when you do that, you're in order to do that, in order to do that well, you're touching on something outside of yourself. And so even if it, even if you look at something like the language arts, where you're reading about different places, you know, there you may be in an area or in a school where you're not able to travel, or you may be in a situation where you're not able to, your kids aren't able to travel, but if you give them a book, they can go anywhere, right? And I think that's true for a lot of the arts. So I think it's really crucial that we do what we can in our respective communities to keep the arts going.
Well, I think that obviously you're an arts advocate for the arts.
I know.
Eric, very much of an advocate for arts.
Yes.
So I want to know on your journey, because we always don't take straight journeys, and I want to know on your journey, Pam, you mentioned a few things about, you know, your journey and how you got started. But tell us about your journey in the area of arts and communication and media that shaped you, and things that you had to get over, that you had to push past. Because a lot of people, one of the things when we first started the call, a lot of people said, you know, I want to know how to get past the difficulties. I want to know how to get past even places where I think I might have failed. How do I get up, brush myself off, and move on? And so what would you say to someone who's in that place? They may be in a stuck place. What would you say to them in reference to just the journey?
I would say that in my journey, and I have to tell the story very briefly, is that in my journey, I dealt with a lot of racism in the beginning. It used to be a time when you applied to the major advertising agencies, black people were kind of excluded. We were rarely seen. I recall when I was at Ross Roy way back in the day, I was the only African-American account executive during that time period. There was one black vice president, and there was one gentleman who was an art person in the art department. But that was it out of the whole company. And there were other black people, but they didn't have those types of positions. So I can, and then I recall when it came time to, our main client was Chrysler. And they would be very careful with whom I would interface with. And it wasn't against me. It was really protecting me. You know, I later understood that, because I had a wonderful boss, and she would never put me in a position where, you know, well, that would be uncomfortable or whatever. I recall my first job being Pam from Wham being kicked out of a restaurant. I had talked to the person on the phone. My friend Dan Poole, who had taught me how to do advertising sales, had left me a contract that was worth about $4,000. I never forget, it was a news sponsorship contract. Girl, I was looking forward to that commission. I had talked to them over the phone, and they said, oh, sure, come by. We'll sign the contract. It was called the Danube Inn Restaurant in Milan, Michigan. I got to the Danube Inn with my little suit on and my little heels and looking nice and everything. And I said, I come in, and I said, Mr., I can't remember the gentleman's name. I'm Pam from Lamb. You know, that was my shtick, right? And they looked at me like I was crazy. So I've never forgotten that, and I've always been, I guess, a little hypersensitive about it, but it never stopped me from, you know, even when I moved here to North Carolina and I realized I knew no one, essentially. I knew one couple, and we really didn't know them. They were, it was just somebody that my ex-husband worked with. And I just was determined that I loved the field that I was in, and I was just going to go out and meet people and tell them what I could do. And so I would do a bunch of cold calls. I didn't care where or whatever. So I guess those are the fears that you have to get over: rejection, the fear of if people say no, so what? Keep going. Eventually you'll get a yes. And I pray an awful lot. I pray 24/7. So that's really my big thing.
That's your go-to. Elena, you have you started on this entrepreneurial journey with the fitness, and tell us about that journey and some things that you have learned, even in this young part of your journey as a leader. What have you learned thus far?
So I learned a couple of things as a leader. One is you definitely need to have the confidence. And not only just in yourself, but you definitely have the confidence. You have to have confidence in God. And you have confidence in God by knowing God and allowing yourself, because you know God, to trust God. So, for example, I was a active co-founder of Bar Studio starting in 2018. And so I was leading a group of instructors, and they would ask me a lot of questions. And sometimes I didn't know the answer, but I was like, you know, I would get into a point where I would kind of minimize myself or not say the things that I needed to say. And that was because I lacked the confidence, because I'm like, well, this is my first time actually leading. But I had to then understand that God put me in this position for a reason, and that this is a season of preparation for where he wants me to go with Bless the Body, and that I needed to take it seriously. And just building my confidence by just knowing God and allowing myself to trust God allowed me to become a better leader. Another thing that I learned within my fitness leadership journey is to definitely be more discerning with who you work with. The other partners that I had with the studio, we just weren't on the same page. We didn't have a vision. The main person who was over it didn't really have a vision. And at one point, it got to the point where it was just like we could not work together. So definitely being more discerning on who I work with and praying about it, like literally every step. Like, God, should I work with this person? God, should I collaborate with this person? I think that definitely influences your leadership journey because, you know, in a way you are yoking yourself with them. So, those are the two things, confidence in God and your leadership, and then being more discerning for sure about who you work with.
How has that prepared you for your own, for this new journey of your own creation? How has that prepared you, the past experience?
I think the past experience has definitely showed me a lot of what to do. Well, a couple of things. So the people that I was working with, there was like three people who had MBAs from Emory, so they did have a lot of practical skills and things like behind the scenes that I didn't really know about building a business. So it really prepared me on the business side because that's kind of where I don't have experience is actually building a business. And so it was really great for me to see how to do that, you know, just doing the LLCs, the trademarks, all those things that go in with it, PMI, all those things. And then I think, too, just knowing that, like, if I am going to be leading, I have to lead with God. Like, there's no other crutch. And if I did not have that season where I got to practice and make a lot more mistakes, then I think that I would not be where I am today. And I know that my confidence and everything is still going to grow, but I think that season was necessary because it taught me how to get into the habit of developing that confidence and getting on a schedule and what and how to have business meetings with God. So I just think that just set up the systems and the framework for my own.
Wow. Wow. Jessica, tell us about, now you had a journey, you took a little journey to Hollywood, and you know, we have a lot of people who want to go to Hollywood. They, you know, they have children or even grandchildren who, or maybe themselves, they're on this line and they want to go to Hollywood. Tell us about your journey there and what it was like, because you worked for a large, you know, put it in context for us in terms of the, you know, the type of agency and what you learned that you did not know, like you would not know it unless you were in the environment. You know, the things we learn and we think we know from watching TV and all this. But tell us about that journey.
Yes, I never really set out to go to Hollywood. Like I said, I was always just a storyteller and just wanted to storytell in any medium. And so Hollywood happened to be the medium that had the most opportunity, obviously. And so I went after law school. I went over and worked for a large agency and was working as an agent trainee, which is basically essentially you when you're an agent for you're representing talent, essentially. So it is kind of like a hybrid between a lawyer and a producer, I would say. So you're looking at material depending on what department you're working in or how you're interacting with your clients. You're looking at material. You're looking at various people to cast in certain programming, and you're helping finance movies. It's a very expansive career. And I would say for anybody who's interested in doing it, if you don't have a direct into it to go to LA or work in Hollywood, I would say what we talked about before, which is to get on social media or to get into podcasting or to get into something that allows you to just storytell, depending on what you really want to do. I think if you're in school right now, then that's the easier way to go because you probably have a career department or a career person at your school that you can connect with, and you could ask them about different production companies. And if your school doesn't have that resource, look at other schools in your area. So you do have to kind of be resourceful. I think that's before you get there and when you're there, just be resourceful and do your own research. And but back to my suggestion, if you're not in this situation, because I do think being in school is a very specific and isolated situation where, you know, you have a lot of resources at your dispense. And I think if you're not in that situation and you're in, just if you're at home and you're living somewhere that's completely divorced from LA, I'd say get on. If you have a story to tell, get on Twitter and tell your story. You know, there was a story, I don't know if you guys, you have to be really on Twitter to know about this, but there was a story a few years ago that a young lady did. I'm blanking on the name, but she had this wild story about living in Detroit and being a stripper. And she got on Twitter and just told the story. And now the story is being made into a film.
Yeah,
we never heard of her. I remember it because you remember that?
I remember that, but I can't remember her name.
I can't remember the name of the young lady, but I remember being at the agency at the time, and the email started floating around the agency, and this is one of the biggest agencies in LA. And it started, and people were like, someone, I think, put a link to it and said, and send it around to all the agents, you know, and that's huge. You know, you can write from your home or on Instagram or whatever. So I think it's just important to, I think, hone your skills. Buy books. Get the books. There are a lot of books out there about, you know, what you want to do, I'm sure. That is the good thing about being alive and working in the internet age. You have access to so much. There are a lot of books that will help you develop your skill set. There are a lot of things online that will help you and guide you in on your journey.
Wow. You know what? One of the commonalities I hear between you and Pam and Elena is this word resourceful. Pam, tell us what role resourcefulness plays, and then also bring us into the current situation of what you're doing and how you're leading now, because you're doing something very different than you normally did, even though you're using the same skill set.
Right. Well, you have to be resourceful because one of the things when I got signed on with this government agency, the director said, and it was weird because everybody was like, you're going to hire a PR person to work for us? And, you know, it was a lot of talk, right? And what was interesting, he said, I want you to act like we're just a client. He said, I'll tell you all the government stuff that you need to know, but I want you to forget about we're government, but treat us like a client. And he gave me all this latitude, and that's all I needed. And what happened was I felt free because, you know, sometimes when you get into, well, this is the way you should do things, and this is the way things should be done because it's government instead of thinking of out of the box. And so once I started doing my own thing and creating campaigns that highlighted social workers and what have you, it created so much buzz in our neighboring counties. And they were like, wow, you get highlighted like that all over the county? I saw your picture. I saw your quote. Wow. You know, and it was just something so small, but it became very big, and other departments within the county started copying. And, you know, imitation is the highest form of flattery. And yes. I think that what it did, too, was that it elevated them and made them feel better about what they did for a living, okay? Because I'm going to tell you, I don't know people who work harder than social workers. I don't know people who work harder than people who deal in child welfare social work. I don't know people who work harder in foster care and can get kids on a dime and you've got to put them in a home within so many hours. I don't know people that work that hard and sacrifice that much that don't deserve to be elevated and lifted. And so my resourcefulness comes from just looking. I'm a storyteller, and I look at various ways to tell their stories and to make them feel good about themselves and for the community to see the good in them. And it has worked. It has worked for us.
Wow.
And I'm constantly doing that. You know, it's something that I think about all the time. And it's something that I constantly strategize on and work on. And you know, I just do things. We just do things out of the box. We had it's amazing. The budget for this agency is like $63 million. And primarily, though the director is male, we have five females who are assistant directors.
Mm.
Out of seven people total in leadership, right? So on Women's History Month, I had pitched the story to our Dura magazine, which normally only does, you know, business leaders in the classical sense or political leaders. And when they got to tell their story and got featured, it was like, what? We never thought about you guys in that way. And they never thought of themselves in that way. Why not?
Wow.
When you're in government, you still lead and you're over all this money and budget and people's lives. So it's just been a whole repositioning of an entire agency.
So you've been able to do that from within. And so it sounds like it's had a major positive effect, not only within, but then without.
It has.
I'm going to come back to you because I want to ask you, Clan, the last question of the night. I'm going to ask you to do something for me. Elena, tell us where you're going now. And you have the Mill Mom, and tell us what that is, and tell us why you created the Mill Mom and the purpose for that, in addition to Bless the Body and what that is.
Yes, so Bless the Body is kind of like set up kind of like my parent company, that you could say, like on paper. And so the Millennial Mompreneur is a subsidiary of that. It's like a community of Bless the Body. So the community is for like millennial moms who are aspiring entrepreneurs, who also want to get healthy and who are passionate about their children and being active mothers in their lives. I mean, all mothers are active, but it's just like a way of just having a community for it. And actually, the Mill Mom was birthed last year, and it was kind of more of like a bloggy type thing. And it's funny because God, I read in one of my journals, like a few weeks ago, like God gave me the vision for the Millennial Mompreneur in late 2018. And, you know, now most recently I have been able to spend a little bit more time with it. And I just recently started a podcast, and it touches on all things about just fitness tips, and being a mom and an aspiring entrepreneur or someone who is seasoned in their entrepreneurship journey, and what it takes to really just have like the mind, body, spirit behind that. And I'm really excited about that. And I really started the Mill Mom because it was just like the truth of like my life. Like I was with my daughter, I was with Eden like all day, and then Alec would get home. At one point in time, we couldn't afford like a sitter or anything, so then I would just go to work and then be at the studio all night because I had training or whatever. And so I'm like, hey, like there are other moms who are probably trying to do the same thing, be very active in their child's life, but still develop something that is their own. And it turns out there were. So it's just been great just having that community, and it falls in line with my mission for Bless the Body, and that is to just build the mind, body, and spirit of millennial women. So, yeah, I'm excited. And now I'm working on my fitness format. It's the Bar Fusion, and it's a fusion between hip-hop dance and the Bar Method. And if you don't know what the Bar Method is, it's based off of a traditional the traditional format of ballet. And so I'm just kind of fusing the two, making it more how do I say this? I'm just making it more fun. So I'm excited about it. And yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
Good. Jessica, what's next for you?
Well, right now I'm writing and editing, so I'm still writing for publications. I think my mom mentioned publications that I've written for, and so every day is a writer's day, and that's what I do for a living. And I'm working on a new podcast right now called the Big Black Book Podcast, so everyone look out for that. It is going to be a podcast about relationships, so that's the core of our life, and we're talking about familial relationships, relationships with your friends, relationships with yourself, with God. So we're throwing out the Little Black Book. That's the book you have just for significant others. And we're making it broader and talking about it all, because it all is interconnected and interrelated. So I'm working on that. And I'm also helping Alina produce her Mill Mom podcast. So my life is as a culture writer and producer. I've spent most of my career, young career thus far, working for other people. So right now it definitely feels good to break out of that and work for myself.
Wonderful. Okay, Pam, I want you are on here tonight with two millennials on the panel with you, and there are millennials in our audience. From the experienced person who has, you know, you've been on the journey, you've been on this arts and entertainment, this media journey. Speak into their lives and let them know. Just give them some pointers on what it's going to take to move from one place to the next. Maybe some things in terms of, you know, because one of the things that I would say about Pam, over the years, you know, and I've known Pam for many years, one of the things that I think of when I think of you, Pam, I think of the word consistency. You have always been consistent. Even if I was living in Michigan, Pam moved to North Carolina. But I would watch her on social media. I would watch her and you have been one of the most, if not the most consistent people that I know in reference to what you're doing. You are willing to take risk and you are willing to take on different challenges. So speak to people who are starting out. They're young in their career. What advice would you give them?
Well, one of the big things is that just recognize that in this industry, what an opportunity you have. I mean, there's just so much opportunity. I also, one thing that I didn't have like I wanted to have, I had them, but not like real tight, is a mentor. I think that would have really helped me in many ways. I had reached out to a woman for her to be a mentor to me, and she ended up we didn't really connect like I had hoped, and and consequently she died. She was a leader in the advertising industry in New York. And I actually had gone to college with her son. But long story short, mentorship is critical. Be kind. Be on time. Be polite. I hope your mom and dad raised you right. Because I'm going to tell you, this is one of the things that drives me bananas. When young people get opportunities and they get introduced to people and they don't know how to write thank you notes and they don't know how to properly follow up with people and they don't know how to properly talk, they don't know how to properly go to lunch and table etiquette and things like that. You know, if all of these things, the small, finer things, that if you have a good mentor, if you weren't raised a certain way or whatever, that somebody can teach you, okay? That make a difference. They make huge differences. I even know of a story where someone was being, of course, this is when the print industry was doing a whole lot better in newspaper, and this person was being interviewed for a job. They were going to be hired. They went to lunch. The person licked the knife, and the person who was going to do the hiring was just one of those people where they couldn't forgive what they saw. And for that discretion, they didn't get the job. So manners.
This is real.
It's all of those small things.
Yeah.
Because
a lot of times, Pam, let me say, Pam, a lot of times people come and they don't know why they didn't get to interview. They didn't get why they didn't get the job. They didn't
right.
know why. But a lot of times it's in those little things of how you showed up. So this is really
right.
important what you're saying.
Right.
The other thing I would say. Go ahead.
I was going to say in my quest at this with what I'm doing now with the government, I was asked the question, why are people poor? And it was a test question. And I had an answer that, you know, not everybody through no fault of their own. I talked about different barriers of education, stuff like that. Somebody prior to me had said because they're lazy.
Mm.
Now, how are you going to represent an agency that's going to deal with people that are impoverished through no fault of their own or say COVID happens to them and all of a sudden they're in sudden poverty or whatever? You know what I mean? You have to have some measure of compassion and understanding of others to do
now,
a job
what
well.
Would- That's wonderful. What would you say, Pam, to the person that's on this call that's in the point in their life where they've had a career, they're, you know, 40, 50, and they're trying to reinvent themselves? What would you say?
Well, you gotta study yourself to be approved. You study to show yourself approved. You've got, just like when you were younger, when you were interested in something, you had to go and learn about it. Don't assume just because you heard about it or whatever, oh, it's easy and I can do it. Because there's a lot of people who do that in public relations. I've seen the most crazy stuff that people are doing. And they say, oh, I'm a publicist, I'm a this, I'm a that. And I'm like, no, you're not. And, you know, because people just assume that they can do whatever you do or whatever. No, maybe not. And I think that you should study whatever it is that you intend on doing. You need to, acknowledge what it is that you don't know, learn what it is, you know, and get a mentor or whatever. Take classes. Do something. But don't just assume that you'll just jump into something, because that would be a big mistake, I think.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. You know, one of the things we always say, things take you longer than you ever expected, cost you in money and time more than you ever expected, you know, and I think a lot of times in terms of resources, being resourceful, and having the tenacity that sometimes that's what we miss. And because we are successful in one area of our life and we go to reinvent ourselves, Pam, like you were talking about, you can't assume, well, I was successful here, so I don't need to go study this new thing. You need to go study the new thing.
Right, and I study all the time because there's no way. I mean, you know, you're talking about social media. Heck, I wasn't using no social media when I started. I had to learn that. I go to conferences. I go to study. I meet with Facebook. I've met with Twitter. I've met Instagram. You go and do those things that iron sharpens iron. You have to study and learn. Okay, you
Absolutely.
Just have to. You can't, you know, it's not going to get in your head by osmosis. You're going to have to learn how to do things. And you have to be open to do it.
Ladies, you all have been absolutely phenomenal. Can you stay on and take a few questions?
Sure.
Okay, Jessica, can you give us your parting words? What is your parting advice for people who are on the call in reference to just what you would want them to know in reference to this particular area of arts, media, and entertainment? Just give us some closing words.
Yeah, I think Pam said a lot of it. I think it takes a lot of work. I don't think I said that earlier, but it's a lot of hard work. So it is a really tough industry. There's always something new, so you always kind of have to be learning new things. And there's always kind of a next hot thing. So you kind of have to stay ahead of the curve. I think that's really important. And being resourceful and maintaining a positive outlook. I mean, you're going to hear no. You might hear no a million times, but you only need one yes. You only need to be right one time. Like, that's what I tell myself even today, you know, when I'm trying to figure something out or I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do this or how I'm going to make something lucrative. You only have to be right one time. And so I think that should give you some perspective when you are in a situation where you feel confused or you feel like you're being rejected, because rejection is a large part of this. I mean, even as a writer now, I've been writing for a long time and I still get no's. I still get a lot of like not interested. So you just have to be prepared for that and just keep whatever you do to keep yourself positive, to keep yourself focused on what you're set out to achieve. I think that you definitely need to tap into that as much as you can.
Great. Elena, what are your parting words?
I think Jessica pretty much said everything there is to be said. And, you know, just to piggyback off of that, like artists, you know, I know that we can be a little sensitive about our work a lot of the times because we put so much of our heart into it, but just to always filter that with wisdom and to just keep going, you know, that our gifts and just know that, like, our gifts are important. So, yeah, that's my parting word. Make God the CEO of your business, keep going, and know that your gifts are important.
Wonderful. Pam, parting words?
Do what you love. And give glory and honor to God and keep him first, and it'll all work out.
Wow. Wow. Ladies, I want to thank you tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.